Let's start from the beginning of the Sedra. Kisisas Rosh Bnei Yisrael. Rashi brings down that there were three different donations made to the Mishkan. Two of them, everybody was equal, half a shekel. And one of them, people gave what they wanted to give, amount and type. Okay. The two donations that were equal, one went to the Adonim, making the sockets, which were the foundation of the Mishkan. And there everybody was equal, rich, poor, everybody gave a half a shekel. And that was also a kapara for the Chet HaEgel, and it represented a kapara for everybody's neshama specifically. And that kapara also was whenever they would count Bnei Yisrael and single people out, which when somebody's singled out already, they are their ledger is investigated, and nobody comes out okay. Therefore, you need a kapara, so you don't count Jews, you don't make a census, but you count the kapara, the machzis ha-shekel. And then there was another half shekel, which was given to support the public sacrifices, and that was done yearly. In fact, it's nogeya to Adar, because Rosh Chodesh Adar, they sent out messengers to announce that people should bring their shkolim and donate their shkolim, send their shkolim for the coming year's sacrifices. And the new year started in Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So a month before, which means Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni, they would have done that, or maybe will do that now, Mirzashem. Okay, and the third donation was Me'ez Kolisha Shidven Libo, anybody who wanted could give one of the materials. There were 13 different materials that went into building the Mishkan, and anybody who wanted to give one of those materials, as much as he wanted to give, what he wanted to give was up to the generosity of the donor. Okay. I think there's a tremendous symbolism over here, and that is the following. When it comes to the foundations of Yiddishkeit, what we're supposed to believe in, what kind of feelings we have towards the Rabbanu Shalom, Ava, Yira, whatever, all Jews are equal. And that is the ultimate intrinsic self-worth of each person. Everybody is equally important. No Jews more important, less important. We all have a neshama. We all have a purpose, and if you fulfill your purpose, you're as important as anybody else who may have a bigger purpose or whatever. So in that respect, everybody's equal, and everybody's neshama is represented by half a shekel. And we're all a half. We're all, what's it called, just a part. We're not the whole, and because of that, every part is important. Even if there are more important functionaries and functions in Klal Yisrael, but everybody depends on everybody else, and you can't have a functioning Klal Yisrael without everybody. So everybody is equally important because everybody depends on everybody else, like a motor of an automobile. Right? The spark plugs may not be as important as the generator, nor as or the alternator, or as expensive. Right? But lemaisa, without spark plugs, the car is going nowhere. So the spark plugs are equally important in the makeup of the automobile as the alternator, even though the alternator is more expensive and has a more important function than the spark plugs, but they all depend on each other to function. Then there is the avoda itself, the mitzvahs that we have, like the sacrifices represent, the individual mitzvahs or whatever, they're also equal. Everybody has the same tariq mitzvahs that apply to them. When they apply to them, where they apply to them may differ, right? But that's a matter just of circumstance. But basically, everybody has the same 613 mitzvahs that can devolve. Nobody has more mitzvahs, nobody has less mitzvahs, except for the Kohanim, whatever, but that's also just a matter of birth or whatever. And then there's the areas where we're different. And that, everybody's the same. Then there's the areas that are different. What your actual function is, in Mishkan, there were different functions. There was the Aron, and it was made of gold, and then there was a Shulchan, and then there were things made out of silver, and things made out of copper, and things made out of wood. and everybody had a different function, and everybody's function was of a different degree. There's room for difference. And everybody donated to the Mishkan what he felt a greater connection to. Right? Some people were more connected to the Aron, they donated their money, their money went to the Aron. They gave gold. Some people were more had a greater affinity to the clothing of the Kohanim. They donated material, and so on. So each person can find his niche, his individuality in the Jewish people, right, and his specific area that he wants to promote. Yet when it comes to the foundations and when it comes to the avoda, we're all equal. But there's an idea of conformity. Person has to conform to certain things equally, and then there's a place for individuality also. I think that's one of the symbolisms of these three trumos. Okay. Any questions on that? We'll go to the next thing. Yeah.
I have a question. Now, when you're doing like a shul and dedicating a shul, and you have a whole list of all the things for dedication, you know, for all the people, there's someone coordinating who's going to give what? Someone gives the test window, someone doesn't dedicate the arrow. Was there some idea of that sort of thing going on too?
Yes and no. It says Ashid Ven Olivo, whoever wanted. However, there's a famous story with Chaim Voloshiner. And it seems to point that there was some kind of direction or what's it called, pikuach. The story goes like this. There was, Reb Chaim Voloshiner started the first yeshiva where people came from all over, and therefore they collected from all over, because students came from all over. So they sent mishulachim to various cities to collect. So the Meshulach would go, and he would collect, and they decided, though, that it would facilitate the Meshulach's ability to collect if he had a nice wagon with some nice horses, and instead of the dilapidated thing he had before, he'd get around better. So he came to a city where the rich person of that city used to give him a very, very nice nedava. Comes with his nice wagon, his nice horses, and he sees that this benefactor isn't treating him as nicely as he used to. Right? Something's wrong. And finally, he gives him his donation, and it's very much reduced from what he usually gave. So he asked him, are you having hard times? What? He said, no. It's just that till now I thought I was supporting Torah. Now I see that you spend money on horses and on wagons. I'm not interested in supporting horses and wagons. I want my money to go to Torah. So I'll give you a donation, but not what I gave you in the past. Came back, told the Chaim Voloshiner what he said. He said, next time you go back there, tell him the following. He says, Bezalel, right, had Ruach HaKodesh, right? Right. What do you need Ruach HaKodesh for? He said, because people gave money to the, what's it called, to the Mishkan, gold, silver. How did he know where that should go? Should it go to the Aron? Should it go to the Shulchan? Right? Maybe it should go for the, what's it called, the horses that pull the wagons, that they also need that for the Mishkan. So it depended on how, what kind of kavana the person had who gave it. Person who gave it with pure kavana, that gold was fit to go to the Aron. Person who gave it with less pure kavana, he looked at it for COVID or whatever, so that maybe went for the Shulchan. Somebody who gave it because he was coerced or because he was peer pressure, so that money went for the horses. He says, go back and tell him that in the end, your money will go to Torah if you give it with the right intention. If you don't give it the right intention, then echanami, we need horses too. Your money will end up going for the horses. So it depends on you, not on us, right? We need to function, to make yeshiva function, we need the horses too. But if you give with the right kavana, I guarantee that your money will be earmarked towards the learning, not necessarily towards the horses. Okay, so there was some kind of pikuach, it seems.
Back in the day, when someone would give gold, somebody would give silver or copper.
Yeah.
This all came from the plunder that others, when they went and asked their neighbors, and where
they where they get, yeah, they get, oh, no, and also from the Yamsu. All the gold, silver, jewelry, whatever the power brought to entice his soldiers was also washed up on the shores. They got that too.
So the assumption would be that almost everybody had the same...
Everybody had a lot of money, but not everybody used it for whatever they used it for.
Rashi says, for their Jewish money,
Right, okay. That's they also made a regal with it, right.
But like a shul, you would have a functionary who would say, if you want to give to the Aron, okay, I can take up to a certain amount. The Aron is taken. Would you like to give it something else? So basically, I would assume for the Beis HaMikdash or for the Mishkan, it would be the same thing. That, okay, here's what we need. Here's a list of what's available.
Right.
Decide what you want to give towards.
It could be.
And
it could be, except there was more than just gift. It says that everybody had a part in building the Aron. How was that? Because some people donated the gold towards it. And everybody had kavana. This wasn't just built, you know, with materials, but it was also built with kavana. So while they were doing it, while the artisans were doing it, a Jew in his house was told, at 10 o'clock this morning, we want you to sit and have kavana towards the building of the Aron, because that's part of your contribution also. So it was possible that the entire Jewish people were involved in building the Aron.
Okay. Well, you think there's 4 years in the desert, this gold isn't really worth a whole lot for them.
Right, economically, but it was right. You know, but it was it has an intrinsic value also, right? The it's interesting. I once went to a meeting of Rabbonim, which it was years ago when there was a lot of anti-Semitism in France. And they had somebody, I think maybe it was the French ambassador, who was visiting Miami, and they got the rabbis together to hear a report about the anti-Semitism in France. So it was a community-wide thing, and all the conservative, reform, orthodox, and something like that, since it wasn't made specifically for rabbis as rabbis, it was a communal thing, so there was no reason not to go. So I went, and I'm sitting next to this conservative rabbi, who says to me, what are you doing these days? So I said, what are you doing these days? He said, well, I'm collecting money for dedications for the third Beis HaMikdash. He already has somebody who donated the Aron, somebody who then donated this or whatever. I don't know what he was doing with the money. He wasn't holding it until Mashiach came. So he was doing something with the money. I didn't ask him that. But I told him, I said, you know, when Mashiach comes, right, do you really think that they are going to use the monies that you collected to build these things? I mean, there may be better people or more important people or bigger tzaddikim that will be able to donate these things, and who said they're going to use your thing, especially since you're using the money now for your own purposes, right, and dedicating the Beis HaMikdash, right? So they obviously had more cheshbon than just who wanted to give. There was some kind of pikuach on who was able to give, who got the schus of giving to those things or whatever. Right.
And you have three of them. Three of them.
Many more.
Okay. The
reconstruction.
Next thing is the kior, the laver, which the Kohanim used to wash their hands and feet together. Right? They used to balance themselves and they washed their hands and feet together all at one time. And from this laver, and there was Ben Katina who made the 18 different spigots. They like have a lot of Kohanim washing at the same time. Just a thought about the idea of Netilas Yadayim, why we wash our hands, and why they wash their hands and feet. We only wash our hands in the morning, not necessarily our feet. What's the concept? Why Netilas Yadayim Shachris? What's the idea? One idea is that you're like a Kohen who dedicates his service to God in the morning by washing his hands. And the second reason is because when a person sleeps, there's a Ruach Tuma that descends on the body, and in the morning it remains on the hands, and the only way it goes off is by washing three times with water. What's the idea? So thinking perhaps an idea is the following. And that is that it says that sleep is 1/60th of death. That doesn't mean if you sleep 60 times, you're dead. It also doesn't mean if there's 60 people sleeping in a room, a Kohen can't walk in. What does it mean? Whenever Chazal say something is 1/60th of something else, it means that it has the concept of that thing. Something is batel b'shishim, means that after 1/60th, it loses its identity. Less than 1/60th. But anything 1/60th or more retains its identity. So the euphemism 1/60th means there's still the smallest identity of this thing and this thing. So if sleep is 1/60th of death, it means that sleep has in it a certain identity of death in its smallest amount, meaning the following. What is death? Death is basically when a person's physical side and spiritual side separate. And his physical side no longer is motivated by his neshama, and it remains inactive. When a person sleeps, to a certain degree, his spiritual side and physical side separate. Not completely, obviously, but the spiritual side is more involved with the spiritual world. That's where dreams happen or whatever. A person's neshama is more aware of the spiritual, and it's less connected or less has less impact on the body. And the body is basically inactive. Okay. So in that respect, it's like a death. Right? Death is the inactivity of the physical side of a person, and his neshama is off somewhere else. Sleep is similar to that. Okay. Now, death causes tuma, right? Because when there was a neshama, which is the activity, the dynamism of the body, is there, it fills the body with kedusha. When the kedusha leaves, it leaves a vacuum. Now, that vacuum is either tuma, or the tuma fills that vacuum. So, machlok is what tuma is. Is tuma something positive that fills a vacuum, or it is the vacuum itself? When a person sleeps, therefore, to a certain degree, he has a ruach ra, a tuma, because there is a certain vacuum that's caused by his inactivity. You weren't put in this world to be inactive. So it's a certain degree, when you're asleep, you're dead, right? And in a minor way. So it remains in the morning where on your hands, because your hands are the symbol of activity. Where is the tuma in sleep that you're inactive? So maisi yodayim is called the activity of a person. There's two, however, there's another aspect of a person's activity, and that is his ability to be mobile. Right? You create with your hands, and you transport with your feet. So a person in the morning, well, let's say the Kohen first, and the hands and the feet also, the 10 fingers are connections, wiring to the 10 spheres. Person's physical side is connected to the spiritual world, and there are 10 spheres, 10 fingers, 10 toes. So that's where your connection is to the spiritual world when you're sleeping. So that connection is to a certain degree minimized. So therefore, to a certain degree, you were tamei, meaning there was a vacuum in your life when you were sleeping, and that's why it could be, it depends on sleep, even if you're up all night, so you weren't inactive. Or it could be it's night, because night is a time of inactivity, even if you were active, but the night itself is a time of inactivity. So it's a shaila, which is the major point. But in the morning, therefore, you have to, again, anoint your hands and wash them with water. Water represents Torah, spirituality. Douse them with that spirituality to bring back the activity. Same thing a Kohen is going to start serving the Rabbanu Shalom every morning as a new service. He has to initiate his hands with that water of spirituality, of Torah, because he was inactive at the night. But by a Kohen, it's not just that he was inactive, but he was outside the Makom HaMikdash. He was displaced too, because you couldn't sleep in the Mikdash, right? They had places to sleep, but it was not in the Kodesh part. Now he came back into the Azorah, back into the Kodesh. So a Kohen not only washed his hands, but he washed his feet, because his placement was important too. Only our activity is significant, but our placement is all the same. So we don't have to wash our feet necessarily. And the real halachic reason why is because we wear shoes and socks. They used to go barefoot, the Kohen, and therefore they needed to wash their feet, because the feet became not dirty, but affected on what was around. Our feet are not affected like that because we wear shoes and socks. so we don't have to wash our feet. It says you have to wash your hands, face, and feet to cover Shabbos. But feet is not that important, as long as your feet are protected anyway, and they don't get that dirty as your hands and your face. Okay, in any case, so that's another, it's a concept of what Netilas Yadayim is, and perhaps a reason why in the Mishkan they had to wash their feet also, aside from their, what's it called, their hands also. Okay. Okay, let's go to something else. Okay. I think we mentioned this in a different context before. We'll mention it now. Let me tell you something about it. Then we have the Ktoris. The Ktoris incense. So it says the Ktoris was a skula to get rich. That's why they never let the same Kohen bring Ktoris a second time, because everybody wanted to do it. Everybody wanted to be rich. Why is a Ktoris a skula for being rich? What is Ktoris? Ktoris is taking physical things and burning them and transforming them into something spiritual. Because the aroma of the incense is something that affects the neshama. Right? How do you know you make a bracha on a nice smell? Because kol ha-neshama tahalil ka, dover ha-neshama nanisba. Aroma is a less physical kind of enjoyment. It's a more spiritual kind of enjoyment. So your neshama enjoys, that's why, when you lose your neshama Moshe Shabbos, what do you do to revive yourself? Smell besamim. Right? Because the besamim arouse and comfort the neshama. So therefore, smelling nice besamim has an effect, a positive effect on your neshama. You lost your extra neshama, the besamim will revive it. Okay. So, somebody who burns incense is taking physical things, even the negative things in the world, because it says the besamim had 13 different ingredients. 12 of them smelled good. One of them had a bad smell. The chelbana had a bad smell. But when it was mixed with the other ones, like in a compound, right, we have salt, if you have sodium and calcium separately, they're poisons. What? NaCl, right, chlorine, right. Sodium and chlorine together, separately, are poisons. But when you put them together, they're salt, which some people know is also poison. But in any case, right, you can't live without it. And not only that, if that's the case, everything's a poison, because so people should starve to death instead of ingesting all these poisons, which are called food. Right, it also matters who you talk to. So I have my idea what health food is. Other people have their idea what health food is. Mine includes hot dogs, salami, whatever. It's a theory that I have. So each one by itself is a poison. When you put them all together, adarav, it's something that's positive that you can't live without. So right. So the same thing over here. If you have it by itself, the chelbana is a bad smell. When you put it together with the other ones, it brings out the good smell in the other ones. In fact, Chazal learned from that since you had 11 different, not 13, 11 different basamim, right? 10 of them smelled good, and one had a bad smell. We learned from that kol tainus sibur she'ein bo miposhe Yisrael, eino tainus sibur. When you want to fast, and you have to have Rishonim there too, Poshe Yisrael. Can't have just good people, right? If they want to join you to a fast, then they have to include them also. That's why Yom Kippur, we start on a Matirin Rishpel Imar Bar Yonim. Because when they want to be part of the Tzibur and fast together with the Tzibur, that even though personally they may not be all that positive, but as part of the Klal, they also serve a purpose. Klal Yisrael are compared to a palm tree, to a date palm. On a date palm, there are also thorns. And the thorns serve a purpose. They protect the fruit. So even though the thorns themselves, when you take them off the tree, are negative, they're just a bunch of thorns, but when they're on the tree, they have a purpose. So too, even Boshe Yisrael, even Rishoyim, but if they're part of the Tzibur, they want to be part of fasting. They don't want to be part, to rejoice, but to fast. So they want to be part of the Tzibur, right, then they also serve a purpose, even though they themselves are poshim, they're sinners, whatever. Right, it's tzibur, right. Tzadik, beinoni, v'rasha. It's not rasha. It's not, that's sabar, right? Which may have its meaning also, right? But tzibur, right, tzibur is only where the vav is there, where the rasha is connected to the tzadik and the beinoni. But it's not, that's the, also the lesson of the aravos. The aravos represent the Jew who doesn't have mitzvahs and doesn't have Torah. Right, as long as he's connected to the other minim, we use him for serving God. But when we separate him on Hoshana Rabbah and he's not connected to the other ones, then we clap him on the ground. That's the symbol. The Marsha says, but there's a condition. First you have to have 10 sweet-smelling ones. Then you can have one who's... You have a minion already of tzaddikim, then you can put the Rasha. But if you have a minion of Rishoyim, don't let the tzaddik get... He'll be contaminated by the other ones. First, you have to have rove, a minion of tzaddikim. You can add the one of the Russia.
That's
but you can't
do
the other one. They don't allow.
They don't catch you as part of the.
Are you serious?
Where? The place where they rove that.
Really? They don't count you for a minion, I hear.
They wouldn't allow you. They wouldn't allow
I see much of a minion, and they're made of every kind of Jew that exists in the world. Okay, that's people. That's not. It could be because we're not maybe not dressed properly. That could be. Yeah. So let's finish the idea, and then I'll get to the question. So therefore, the Ketores represents all different kinds of physical things, even the negative things. But when they're all together, right, you can transform them into something spiritual. So somebody who has the ability to take material, physical things and transform it into something spiritual deserves to be rich. Right? Somebody, that's the kind of person who should have material wealth because he'll know how to turn it into something spiritual. That's the idea. Yes?
I'm trying to think of the real picture between Kapala and Lashon Hara.
Right.
And I'm trying to think of how the...
How that fits in?
The school of being rich and Kapala and Lashon Hara.
Could be that... The, offhand, okay, says that most Lashon Hara comes from jealousy, where people think that somebody else is taking something that's coming to them, or they're jealous of them, or whatever. Most Lashon Hara is like that. That's why Lashon Hara, to a certain degree, is considered kfira, because if you don't believe that God is the one who ordains what a person should have, and what right, you think that he's taking it from you, right, then you don't really believe in the Rabbanus 100%. So fear and Lashon Hara go together. So what could minimize Lashon Hara? Well, a person sameach b'chelko. He's happy with what he has, and that's really a rich person. Real richness, that's some sofer says that those schoolers that say that a sandig is what's it called, as a schooler to become rich. It's like being makriv ketores. You're like the mizbeach haketores. So if you're a sandik, it's a school to be rich. And the Vilna Gaon says, see, a lot of people were sandik, they never became rich. The Chasam Sofer says it doesn't mean that you get a lot of money. It means you're sameach b'chelko. It's a skula to be sameach. That's real wealth. Because you could have a lot of money and poor. Right? I in Miami, so we wanted to build a new shul. So this was 40 years ago. So we decided in order to be able to build the shul, to get the loans we needed a certain amount of money. And we wanted a $5,000 pledge over 5 years from each member. So I had balabatim there that were doctors, lawyers, who were living in palaces and earning, you know, six-digit salaries. In those days it was $100,000, $200,000, which today maybe is nothing, but then it was a big amount. And I had balabatim who were eking out a living and earning about $10,000 a year, which was an average salary 40 years ago. So I figured, I go to these people earning $10,000 a year and ask them for a $5,000 pledge over 5 years, they're going to tell me, you know, that's a tenth of their salary, that's a little difficult. But if I go to these people who are earning hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's like they'll take it out of their change purse. So let me go and be successful first with these rich people, and then I'll get the courage to go to the other people. So I remember starting out with one doctor. I figured, you know, he'll just say, oh, 1 second, I'll go in the other room and bring out the $5,000, what's that? And he starts to pour out his heart to me about cash flow and a million other words that I never heard of before, right? I didn't have cash to flow. I didn't know what I was talking about. And his law school or medical school debts that he has to pay back. And by the time I finished with this guy, I felt like leaving him a quarter for a cup of coffee because I really felt, wow, you know, the guy really is poor. He told me, he said, listen, Rabbi, I'm working on expanding my practice. And if I can just double my income next year, you have the pledge without a problem. Okay. So I saw him getting nowhere with these people. So I went to the poor people. And I knew what they were going to say. Rabbi, how can I give you $5,000 over 5 years? I only earned $10,000. But I'm working on getting a second job or whatever. And if I can just double my income, you'll have the pledge. Then I realized the rich people are poorer than the poor people. The poor people only needed $10,000 to be rich. And the other guy needed $100,000 to be rich. So he was $100,000 poor. This guy's only $10,000 poor. So who's poorer? So riches doesn't depend on how much money you have. It depends on your attitude if you feel that you have what you need. So therefore, having more money is not going to make you rich, but having the feeling that you have what you need will make you rich. That's Isaiah also. Sameach Bechelko is not just a nice idea. It's true. So could be, therefore, that the Ketores, where a person understands that his material possessions are given to him to turn into spiritual things, right? And therefore, he can be Sameach Bechelko. That's why it makes him an usher. An usher, that's the kind of person who won't speak Lashon Hara. So there's connection to Kapara for Lashon Hara, too. Okay. That's one more thing. I have a million more things here, but...
I have another question that's been bothering me.
Yeah?
It seems that everything comes along as a Kapara for the Chet HaEgel. It seems that the Yara is a Kapara, and the Zahim is a Kapara for the Chet HaEgel. Everything seems to be a Kapara for the Chet HaEgel. Something seems like, you know, I mean, of course this was, you know, a tragic, you know, but it seems that, you know, what is that? Okay, it's Chet HaEgel. Okay, you know, and then this Paraduma is a Chet HaEgel. Everything's a Chet HaEgel.
Okay, it says, okay, it's a very good question, except that which I should have dedicated the whole shiur. In fact, I'm working on a drasha now that addresses this. Just a point. It's more than that. It says that every time that the Rabbanu Shem punishes Klai Yisrael throughout history, there's a little bit of the Chet HaEgel that's in there. That means the Chet HaEgel was a sin that left a pagam, that left a blemish in the makeup of Klai Yisrael. And therefore, that blemish needs to be corrected. And it's throughout history that it happens. What was it? L'chora, on the surface, it doesn't make any sense. Because according to what it says in the Pasuk, right, only 1.5% of the Jewish people sinned. Okay, according to the Zohar, they all were from the Erev Rav. Not one Jew sinned. Only the 3,000 were the Erev Rav. Well, right, Shiches Amcha, right, but the Zohar says they all were from the Erev Rav. There was no Jew. According to the Vilna Gaon, there wasn't even 3,000. There was only 600. Okay? That means 0.1% of Klal Yisrael, even if it was all Jews. Right? So, now the answer is that Sfarno says that the sin was that they didn't protest. Not only didn't they protest, but they were like lackadaisical. They got up and they ate and they drank, and then Vayakumu Ha'am Letzacheh. The Erev Rav was the one who killed Chur, and they were the ones who were the Megal Arayis, and they were the ones who were Avodah Zorah. But everybody else didn't protest it. When you don't protest something, okay, this is really this taking the kernel of what is probably going to take me 25 minutes to say at some other time. When you don't protest something, so you could be an accomplice to the sin, but even let's say you couldn't stop it. So you're not an accomplice. And it's talking about somebody you're not responsible for, like the Erev Rav. But there's an idea of being insensitive, that if you didn't protest, it means it doesn't hurt you. That means there's some place within you that that sin has a connection. It shows not something about what you did, but something that you are. And that's the problem. And that's why it says, the Jewish people, say, the Rabban Shem says, HaTishkach, the Rabban Shem forgot us. Right? Shechoni, Hashem Shechoni. So the Rabban Shem answers, HaTishkach Isha Ula, can a woman forget her child? Right? Marachin Ben Bitna, Gam Eila Tishochachna. So the Klal Yisrael said, well, if you can't forget Rabban Shem, then you won't forget the Chet HaEgel either. Eila Lokecha Yisrael. Eila Lokecha Yisrael. So Gam Eila Tishochachna. I can forget that too. So then maybe you forget Matan Torah. V'anochi Lo Eshkocheich. So it bothered me. The Eila wasn't the sin. That was what the Erev Rav said, Eile Elohecha Yisrael. These are your God speaking to the Jewish people. So we're talking about the effect on us. Why is it Eile Tishcha? And Anochi is what we said. It should have said, Gam Nasa V'nishma Lo Eshkocheich. Not Anochi. Right? The answer is, God said Anochi, I am your God, meaning there's a connection between us and the essence of the Jewish people is fit to have that relationship with me. Eile Elokecha was not what you were, but what you didn't react to. That also shows something bad about you. But the Anochi overweighs that. I see your essence is more the Anochi than the you're not responding to the Eile Elokecha Yisrael. But that was the sin. The sin was, by not responding to it, you showed that it was a place within you for Avodah Zarah. So even though Anochi says that your main essence is connected to the Rabbanu Shel Olam, but there's a certain blemish, right? That's not your main essence. That's something that can be forgotten. It can be taken. You can't take away your main essence. If you do, then you're not here anymore. But you can take away a blemish that's not your main essence. I'm glad you asked the question, because now I really understand what I wanted to say. Okay, you hear what I'm saying, though, a little bit? I hear what I'm saying. It's good enough. Yeah. No, so the kapara is that it's a slow process to make up for that blemish that became part of the makeup of the Jewish people. It's not our essence, but it's a blemish that affects our essence. That's it. Yeah. Eventually be forgotten.
We also got the mitzvah for the Adarim before we did the
Chesed. Oh, that if you wait till next week, I'll speak about it. Right? It seems like the Mishkan is a kapar for the Chet HaEgel, yet there would have been a Mishkan had there not been a Chet HaEgel too. We'll see. Right. We'll see. That's only Machlokas. It's both are true. And that we'll see next week with a Medrash from Gemara from Brachos that I want to explain based on.